just let her out.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. Let me out. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. All right, after 2 weeks out of state, preventing a quorum in the Texas State House, preventing Republicans from voting to adopt a new U.S. House map in Texas in the middle of the decade, a House map that would rob about five elected Democrats of their current seat, and facing threats of arrest, expulsion, and more all the while, and ultimately raising national attention to the issue that is leading Democratic-led states to redistrict their own U.S. House seats in response to the Texas Republican scheme. Well, after all of that, Texas state Democratic lawmakers finally returned to the Lone Star State on Monday, as we reported, to now fight that map in the legislature and, more importantly, in the courts. And now the Democrats have come back to the state. State Republicans are now locking a Democratic lawmaker into the Texas House chamber, keeping her prisoner, essentially. Not just essentially, but literally inside the state house.
I am embarrassed for my state, my home state of Texas.
You should be. Hi, Des.
Hi.
That's Desi Doyen, our producer. I don't blame you directly for what's going on down there in Texas.
Yeah, but it's definitely shameful, shameful behavior.
It
and
is.
Totally on brand for Texas Republicans.
They are refusing to allow her to leave the building as we go to air in
literally.
Order to force her presence at the House, state house, so that Republicans can ultimately approve their newly gerrymandered map, created at the demand of President Donald Trump. This is what democracy in Texas has now come to. This is what American democracy has now come to, since what happens with the Texas House maps is going to affect the entire nation as far as whether Democrats can gain back a House majority in next year's midterms to begin trying to put the brakes on Trump's runaway authoritarian agenda. As CNN reports this afternoon, Democratic Texas State Rep. Nicole Collier has now spent over 24 hours on the Texas House floor in protest after refusing a Republican demand to be placed under the watch of the State Department of Public Safety, a Texas state trooper, in other words. When Texas House Democrats returned to the Capitol in Austin on Monday after having fled the state earlier this month, House Speaker Dustin Burrows, a Republican, put constraints on the Democrats' movements, on the movements of elected officials from the opposite party. Burrows announced that the Democrats could only leave the House floor if they received written permission and agreed to be under law enforcement escort until the chamber reconvenes on Wednesday morning. The Democrats, who skipped out on previous attempts to meet quorum for a special session to approve the redrawn congressional maps, will now have an around-the-clock DPS escort to ensure their presence when the House convenes on Wednesday, notes CNN. But of course, only if they agree to one of these permission slips. Otherwise, apparently, they will be imprisoned in the Capitol building in Austin. Here's how AP reports it today. A Texas Democrat opted to stay in the state house chamber overnight and into Tuesday rather than allow a law enforcement officer to shadow her while Republicans try to prevent further delays to redrawing congressional maps that President Donald Trump wants, suggesting she opted, I guess, to be a prisoner. That's kind of a strange way to report that, AP. She was effectively imprisoned and forced to sleep at her desk under the bright lights that remained on all night inside the Texas Statehouse chamber. Democrats had to sign what they called permission slips, agreeing to the surveillance by Texas state troopers in order to be allowed to leave the floor. State Rep. Nicole Collier stayed overnight in the House rather than signing and agreeing to around-the-clock surveillance. She offered remarks to NBC News via video conference as she remained largely by herself on the Texas House chamber floor on Monday night.
Today, a quorum was established in the Texas House so that they could continue to do, the business of the House. Once that quorum was restored, the speaker made an announcement and said that any Democrat who had denied quorum would only be allowed to leave the building if they signed a permission slip agreeing to be under the custody and control of DPS. I refuse. I've just had enough. I've had enough of this bullying tactics that they use against those who are part of the minority party in terms of being the Democrats. They just continue to bully us and run over us. And this is just more of their exercise of power and authority over our ability to challenge them. I mean, I've just had enough. I said, why would I agree to this? Why do I have to continue to be subject to their control? And so I've had enough, just like the American people have had enough of the Trump takeover and the harmful policies that they've passed in Congress. I'm not going to be part of that process that gives him more reinforcement to harm my community and my people. This is just one little petty way of showing that they have the upper hand, but they didn't realize that I'm just as stubborn as they are, and I'm refusing to back down. I will not allow you to put my people down without a fight.
Good for Democratic State Rep. Nicole Collier in Texas.
Yes.
Speaking there on Monday night from the Texas House chamber, where she has been effectively imprisoned by Republican state lawmakers who will not let her leave the floor until she agrees to be escorted 24/7 by a Texas state trooper in order to force her to show up at the state legislature on Wednesday so the Republicans can vote to steal 5 Democratic U.S. House seats next year, largely from minority Democratic voters and elected Democrats like Collier. This is what American democracy has now come to. And I guarantee you it's going to get worse before it gets better, unless more Democrats like Collier stand up to the Donald Trump-inspired bullying and authoritarianism, which he and Texas Republicans apparently must use to try and defeat Democrats, because Republican public policy is so wildly unpopular among voters. They literally have to lock in elected officials to get their way. As AP reports, lawmakers had officers posted outside of Democrats' Capitol offices, and suburban Dallas Rep. Mahila Plissa said one had followed her on her Monday evening drive back to her apartment in Austin after spending much of the day on a couch in her office. She said that he went with her for a staff lunch and even down the hallway with her for restroom breaks.
Good Lord.
Plissa said in a telephone interview, quote, "This is a waste of taxpayer dollars and really performative theater." Texas State Rep. Cheryl Cole, another one of the Texas Democrats who broke quorum but signed the so-called permission slip to leave the House on Monday, wrote in a Twitter thread on Tuesday, quote, "While on my morning walk, my DPS, Texas Department of Public Safety escort, who was forced upon me to track my every movement, threatened to arrest me. He lost me on the trail, got angry about it, and made a scene in front of my constituents on the trail. While a little shaken up from the incident, I remain undeterred by this intimidation tactic by House Republicans to have a 24/7 state police presence to intimidate me and my colleagues. This is also why I stand with my colleague Nicole Collier, who has refused to go along with the charade and is still on the House floor 24 hours later. We will not be intimidated by this, and history, she says, will remember this. For her part, Collier, who represents a majority-minority district in the Fort Worth area, said that she would not, quote, sign away my dignity and allow Republicans to, quote, control my movements and monitor me. I know these maps will harm my constituents, she said in a statement. I won't just go along quietly with their intimidation or their discrimination. Again, good for Rep. Collier. And thank you for your service.
Yeah, here we have big government Republicans doing what big government Republicans like to do. Here, they're preventing the free movements of black lawmakers.
The Republican-controlled Texas House scheduled a vote now for Wednesday on these new maps, while California Democrats are retaliating by advancing their own new U.S. House boundaries ahead of the 2026 midterms. To counterbalance what Texas is doing, California's initiative will only move forward if, A, approved by state voters in a special election on November 4, and B, the new map will only take effect if Texas is successful in their gerrymander of their already gerrymandered state. California's district boundaries are drawn by an independent state commission by mandate of the voters in the state's constitution. Thus, the special election on November 4 will be needed to allow the independent commission map to be waived for this other map, being approved by state lawmakers this week. The commission's map would then be waived until the 2030 elections if, of course, state voters approve. Trump, meanwhile, has also pressured other Republican-run states to also consider redistricting as well, while Democratic governors in multiple state houses have now indicated they would follow California's lead in response. The president wants to shore up Republicans' narrow House majority and avoid a repeat of the midterms during his first presidency when Republicans lost the majority in the U.S. House. After gaining House control in 2018, Democrats used their majority to stymie Trump's agenda and to impeach him twice. Nationally, the partisan makeup of existing district lines puts Democrats within 3 seats of a House majority right now. Of the 435 total House seats, only several dozen districts are now considered to be competitive. So even slight changes in a few states could affect which party ends up winning control next year. Redistricting typically occurs once, only once, at the beginning of each decade after the census. But Texas is now firing a gun in a partisan redistricting battle to the bottom. And apparently they are willing to literally imprison their opponents if they refuse to go along with them. Now, we've been trying to keep you updated on this story because I think it strikes at the very heart, the very core of our representative democracy. It's not just a Texas story at all, but a national story. And not only because it is forcing other states to take action now in response, but because the results of all of this will affect the entire nation and the entire world. In the event that an unpopular Donald Trump running on unpopular Republican policies is able to somehow muscle his way to another 2 years of unchecked runaway power with a fully compliant Republican majority in both houses of the both chambers of the U.S. Congress. It is because of those larger implications that I have regrettably set aside my previous opposition to political partisan redistricting by both Republicans and Democrats in order to favor Newsom's initiative at this point, which at least seeks approval from state voters to counter what it is that Texas is doing to bully the state and to undermine democracy in all of America right now. We've opened up the phone lines once or twice on this show to hear from callers, from our California listeners, who, at least from that very small sample of, you know, likely left-leaning listeners, they also seem to support the effort by Newsom to respond in kind to what Texas is doing. But last night, after Monday's broadcast, I received an email from a usually supportive listener who disagreed with my particular stance on this matter, as difficult as it is for me to take this stance, placing the voters of the nation ahead of individual voters in any particular district here in California. So listener and fairly regular emailer, Poufet, who's generally supportive of this show, believes that I've got this one wrong. He writes to me last night via bradcast@bradblog.com. Subject, gerrymandering in California. Yo, brother B and sister D. That would be you, uh-huh. I'm guessing, Des. I'm surprised that smart, intelligent beings like you and Ms. D would lower yourself to Republican insanity regarding gerrymandering. If you fight fire with fire, as I quoted Governor Newsom making the case for when officially announcing this initiative late last week, if you fight fire with fire, the fire grows stronger and then spreads. The best way to fight a fire is to deprive it of oxygen. Why not offer better policies, which the Dems have, and build our media infrastructure? We will not win by using negativity. We will win by keeping it positive, keeping it real. Hurry slowly, he says. Love you both, Poufet. And, of course, love you back, Poufet. But we may have to agree to disagree on this one, or at least continue to try to convince each other of our positions. As I wrote to him in response last night, I said, listen, if voters aren't allowed to vote for the candidate of their choice, how can, quote, we win? If the most positive candidate in the world is running in a district that has been redrawn with a partisan gerrymander to have 10% Democrats in this case and 90% Republicans, they will not win, no matter how positive. That's why the Voting Rights Act came into being, and now that SCOTUS is not enforcing it anymore, we see states like Texas saying, well, to hell with minority voters. We're going to crack them and pack them to steal all of the districts. Yes, I wrote, I am a longtime opponent of gerrymandering, but if they are going to deprive the nation of the majority that the nation's voters voted for, then that is the opposite of democracy. That is autocracy. And we don't get out of that with positivity. We got out of that with wit and toughness. No negativity is required. We will, of course, continue to follow this story because, make no mistake, though it's the middle of 2025, this is all about the 2026 midterm elections. They are already underway right now, and the first shot has been fired by Texas, and given the circumstances, the first time an autocratic leader has ever taken over the U.S. presidency this way, I think a lot of us are going to have to question our previous stands on a whole bunch of things. But if voters can't vote their way out of mistakes like Donald Trump, if they're not allowed structurally to choose another government, well, then we are no longer the USA. We are both pre- and post-Soviet Russia at this point. And I'll be damned if I'll allow that to happen on my watch, at least without doing everything that is within my power to do about it. So you may agree or disagree with me and or Poufet. If so, of course, I'd be happy to hear from you as well via bradcast@bradblog.com. In other corrupt electoral news, speaking of, as Poufet referenced there, working to build our media infrastructure, a story that I was unable to get to yesterday, but it's one that we have also been covering for several years in this case. The right-wing Republican propaganda outlet called Newsmax has agreed to pay $67 million to settle a lawsuit accusing it of defaming the voting equipment vendor named Dominion Voting Systems. by spreading lies about Donald Trump's 2020 election loss, that according to documents filed on Monday. The settlement comes after Fox News Channel paid $787 million, $750 million, to settle a similar lawsuit with Dominion back in 2023, and after Newsmax paid what court papers described as a $40 million settlement to settle a libel lawsuit from a different voting system vendor, the one named Smartmatic, which was also a target of pro-Trump conspiracy theories on the network, despite the fact, by the way, that Smartmatic has only one contract in the entire U.S., and that is for voting systems here in Los Angeles. So just about every voting system lawsuit at this point against every right-wing Donald Trump-supporting network that put out evidence-free lies about the 2020 election being stolen by rigged voting machines, all of that, every single one, has resulted in the right-wing media outlet paying up tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars in settlements to make those acts of defamation go away. What does that tell you about their argument? What does that tell you about whether the 2020 election was stolen or not, at least by voting systems, as Donald Trump continues to pretend? Delaware Superior Court Judge Eric Davis had ruled earlier that Newsmax did indeed defame the Denver-based Dominion Voting Systems Company by airing false information about the company and its equipment, but Davis left it to a jury to eventually decide whether that was done with malice, which is necessary to prove a defamation case like this, and if so, how much Dominion deserved from Newsmax in damages. Well,
we should point out right now that when they refer to with malice in a defamation lawsuit, that's a specific legal term for defamation with a specific legal definition. It doesn't mean that Newsmax hated or had malice for Dominion, but specifically that the outlet knew or should have known that what they were reporting.
They should have known. They did know, and they reported it anyway. They knew it was untrue, and yet they let it go. So that was going to be up to a trial and a jury to decide how much that Newsmax would have to pay Dominion. But they reached this settlement before that trial could take place because, in other words, Newsmax knew that this was going to cost them more than $67 million if they allowed a trial to proceed and they let a jury decide how much they would have to pay up. The settlement was disclosed by Newsmax in a new filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. It said that the deal was reached in this settlement on Friday. Now, earlier this year, Newsmax became a public company on the stock exchange. So they have to report such things like settlements like this to the SEC. By the way, when Newsmax issued its IPO, its initial public offering earlier this year, back in the glory days of the Trump is here to save the day times, well, the stock, after the IPO, it immediately shot up to a high of $237 per share. That stock has since dropped, along with Trump's approval ratings and his fortunes, down to as low as $11 a share.
Mm-mm-mm.
Now, after the settlement, it went up a little bit, so I think it was about $13 a share.
Woo-hoo.
But with just like with Trump's failing social media company, which trades as DJT on the stock market, a lot of Trumpers lost a whole hell of a lot of money investing in their right-wing cult icons. Sad. Anyway, a spokesman for Dominion said the company was pleased to have settled the suit. I bet they were. And that it'll be paid off by the MAGA suckers and dupes who invested in that company, invested in Newsmax when it went public before they lost all of their money. But that money's now going to Dominion. Nice job, MAGA. The same judge in this case also handled the Dominion Fox News case and made a similar ruling that the network repeated numerous lies by Trump allies about his 2020 loss, despite internal communications showing, yes, that Fox officials knew the claims were bogus. At the time, Judge Davis found it was, quote, crystal clear, and he put the word crystal in all caps in his ruling, that none of these allegations were actually true. Quote, how long are we going to play along with election fraud? Asked Newsmax host Bob Sellers just 2 days after the 2020 election was called for Biden. That according to internal documents revealed as part of the case. So yes, Newsmax knew. At least their host Bob Sellers knew and said, how long are we going to go along with this? Newsmax took pride, however, that it was not calling the election for Biden and, as the internal documents show, saw a business opportunity in catering to viewers who were hoaxed into believing that Trump had won. Private communications that surfaced as part of Dominion's earlier defamation case against Fox also revealed that network's business interests intersected with decisions that it made related to coverage of Trump's 2020 election lies. At Newsmax, employees repeatedly warned against false allegations from pro-Trump guests like attorney Sidney Powell. According to documents in the lawsuit, in one text, even Newsmax owner Chris Ruddy, a Trump ally, said that he found it, quote, scary that Trump was meeting with Powell about these bogus claims. Dominion was at the heart of many of the wildest claims aired by guests on Newsmax and elsewhere who promoted conspiracy theories involving deceased Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez rigging the machines for Joe Biden. Now, I have to note that I take personal credit for that one, since Powell was citing a decade-old series of exclusive reports that I published at bradblog.com in that particular claim about Hugo Chavez. My reporting, of course, at the time was accurate, but it had nothing to do, of course, with what would happen or didn't happen 10 years or so later in 2020. But I do want to thank Sidney Powell for the extra traffic that she helped generate for bradblog.com. I also want to thank her for helping to cost Fox and Newsmax tens and hundreds of millions of dollars for believing and or promoting her false claims about all of this. As AP reports, though, Trump has insisted his fraud claims are real. There is no evidence that they were, and the lawsuits in the Fox and Newsmax cases show how some of the president's biggest supporters knew that they were false at the time. You know, when you see what Trump does, you see what Trump says, and you wonder, does he really believe? Never mind whether he believes this. You got to wonder whether the people around him supporting him actually believe this. And now that we have the documentation from what happened back in 2020, well, we know that some of his biggest supporters know that he is full of bleep. They know it. They're just playing along because they are as corrupt as he is. Trump's then Attorney General, William Barr, even said so at the time, as you know, that there was no evidence of widespread fraud. And Trump and his backers lost dozens of lawsuits in which they alleged fraud, but they could show no evidence to support it. Some of those cases before Trump appointed judges. In fact, they won zero of those lawsuits. Numerous recounts, reviews, audits of the election results, including some run by Republicans, found no signs of significant wrongdoing or error in affirming Joe Biden's win. After returning to office, Trump pardoned those who tried to halt the transfer of power during the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, which a bipartisan majority of the U.S. Senate found was incited by Donald Trump during his second impeachment trial. Donald Trump has, since returning to office, directed his DOJ to investigate Chris Krebs, the former Trump-appointed cybersecurity expert who had vouched for the security and accuracy of the 2020 election in his role as the head of CISA at the time, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. As an initial trial date approached in the Dominion case, earlier this year, Trump issued an executive order attacking the law firm that litigated the case and the Fox case, Sussman Godfrey. The order is part of a series of targeting law firms that Trump has tussled with. He cited Sussman Godfrey's work on elections and said the government would not do business with any of its clients or permit any of its staff in federal buildings. That while the firm was supporting a Dominion in their lawsuit against Newsmax, run by his buddy, Chris Reddy. A federal judge put that action against Sussman Godfrey, however, on hold, saying the framers would view it as, quote, a shocking abuse of power. Because, of course, it is. But these people, these Republicans in this case, let's be clear, will continue to abuse their power until and unless people stand up to them. Whether it's a law firm like Sussman Godfrey, whether it's a voting system company standing up against known false claims by propaganda outlets masquerading as news outlets, whether it's a law firm hoping to stand up against the Trump administration, trying to cow it into submission with their abuse of federal power, or Democratic state lawmakers in Texas standing up against the thuggery and the abuse of state power by Republican state lawmakers, or a Democratic-controlled state seeking permission from voters to temporarily rewrite the state's U.S. House maps in ways that they may personally find offensive, but find necessary for the greater good of, yes, fighting fire with fire to save democracy in the United States of America from a wannabe tyrant and his compliant party apparatchik. Or anything else that these off-the-rails, anti-democratic, pro-fascist Republicans are now hoping to do to terrify and to terrorize the American people with, at least those Americans who don't agree, who don't go along with their authoritarian agenda. None of this ends with either these acts of abuse by these Republicans, there will be more, especially if we do not push back, or these acts of defiance. Because the message, the pushback, must happen again and again and again over time, and then it must finally be accompanied by voters at the polls, putting their votes where their morals are, fighting like hell to cast their votes and to have their votes counted as cast, no matter how much Republicans are trying to stop them from exercising that right, and no matter how long and how many Republicans are going to lie about why it is they lost, if, in fact, they end up losing. The fight, as I see it, must continue. We have no choice. Fire with fire. Of course, your mileage may vary, and I'm always interested in hearing from you via bradcast@bradblog.com, if that is the case. Well, more evidence on why that fight must continue after we take a quick break here, following up yesterday's coverage of the Department of Homeland Security using literal Nazi imagery in their ICE recruitment campaign, and much more, including Desi Doyen's latest Green News report. That is all still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently, without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Yesterday on the show, I covered a couple of tweets that were posted by the official Department of Homeland Security account on Twitter, now renamed X, as part of its new ICE recruitment program. The tweets had used white supremacist and literal Nazi and neo-Nazi imagery, from citing a well-known neo-Nazi book title when posting an image of Uncle Sam calling for people to join ICE, to a recruitment propaganda video that was posted to the DHS site that literally used the familiar Nazi font that was used on things like the cover of Hitler's Mein Kampf. That's being done in our name, by the Department of Homeland Security. And we did not know who at DHS was responsible for those postings, because they're cowards and they don't sign them. But several outlets, specifically NOTUS, which stands for News of the United States, and The Independent, well, they certainly seem to have come up with a good candidate today, behind those posts, perhaps, identifying a guy by the name of Eric Lendrum as the DHS public relations official responsible for a relentless flood of social media posts on DHS pages using Nazi memes, slogans, and images. As The Independent reports about this guy, a speechwriter at the Department of Homeland Security has been linked to hateful posts on social media, reportedly claiming that American conservatives are ostracized like the Jews were in Nazi Germany. Same thing. It's exactly the same thing. A blog post reportedly authored by Eric Lendrum celebrated the January 6th insurrection and compared the following fallout for conservatives to the Holocaust and slavery, according to NOTUS, citing, as The Independent does, previous blog items of this guy, social media postings and videos by Lendrum that were posted prior to his return to the Trump administration, where he had served as a press assistant at the Interior Department back during Trump's first term. Quote, American conservatives are right now on a course for being every bit as ostracized and alienated from broader society as Jews were in the years leading up to Nazi Germany, Lendrum claimed in a 2021 blog post on a right-wing opinion and news site called American Greatness. Lendrum posted on that site until March of this year. His podcast called The Right Take is listed in his author's description on that site. And on one episode of that podcast, he said he liked watching videos of scared legislators during the January 6th insurrection. Quote, there's something so gratifying about seeing the images of these members of Congress, especially the Democrats, crouching under their chairs, putting on those stupid bubble masks, those anti-gas bubble masks, and then taking selfies, a laughing Lendrum said just days after the Capitol riot. Because it was hysterical, right? People cowering for their lives at that point. In another episode, this guy in October of 22, he said that immigrants put Europe at risk while also backing the racist, anti-Semitic, so-called great replacement theory, the far-right theory that claims that non-white immigrants are replacing white people and damaging their superior influence in society. Quote, given the direction of Europe right now, we could use a far-right government at this point, said Lendrum in the 2022 video. On his Twitter account, his account named Real Eric Lendrum, just like Real Donald Trump, he has argued for the removal of transgender, quote, ideology and compared asylum seekers to, quote, scum. The DHS Office of Public Affairs states that a speechwriter at the department is responsible for preparing, quote, speeches, talking points, editorials, congressional testimony, video scripts, web content, and other written content for the secretary and deputy secretary. The Department of Homeland Security is the largest federal law enforcement agency. So this guy is working for DHS in public affairs. I don't know that we know for sure that he's the guy who said, hey, yeah, let's use this Nazi font. But he sure is a good candidate for that, given his background. In one of the blog posts linked to him, he appeared to argue that so-called conservatives were facing political oppression similar to that of slaves and victims of the Holocaust. Saying, quote, it has been said that the most surefire way to create an authoritarian regime is to completely dehumanize a significant portion of the population so that their subsequent enslavement by the state will not face any larger resistance. It was true, he said, during slavery. It was true during the Holocaust, and it is true now, the blog post stated. But this was an older post, so he wasn't talking about the immigrants who are now being completely dehumanized. He's talking about what he describes as conservatives being the real victims here, just like during the Holocaust. Except, as Lendra may or may not have noticed, millions of the Holocaust victims were actually imprisoned and killed just because they happened to be Jewish or Catholic or gay. While to date, as far as I know, zero so-called conservatives have actually been imprisoned or killed for simply being so-called conservatives. Responding to questions from The Independent, DHS shared a link to the text of the First Amendment. Clever. Quote, one of the posts stated in May of 2023 on his Twitter account, quote, they are not immigrants. They are not undocumented. They are an invading army, the largest invasion in American history. And what are you supposed to do with an invading army? Crush it by any means necessary. That's the hashtag America First way. And that's the guy who seems to be running the DHS PR department at this point. And if it's not him running it, well, then that probably means there's a whole bunch of other Nazi wannabes working out of that department right now. That guy is behind, at least in part, this flood of racist, anti-Semitic, hateful group of statements that you are now seeing coming from DHS right now, the largest law enforcement agency in the nation and arguably the world. But yes, that's what you get when you elect Donald Trump as president of the United States, because elections have consequences.
This is how far we have fallen as a country. I mean, if this kind of neo-Nazi type was in the middle of any other administration prior to Donald Trump's first in 2016, they would have been drummed out. It would have been, you know, a 24/7 emergency news cycle across all the networks. But that's how far Trump has degraded our sense of what is right and wrong and our values. And the media is really just kind of sleepwalking through all of this.
Not only would they have been drummed out, but also whoever it was that hired them in the first place or approved of their hiring. You know, if a president of the United States knew about that and allowed that to go forward, there would be calls for his or hers impeachment at that point. But such as this is, I just heard about this Lindrum story today, and I don't hear many other people out there talking about it, so I thought you should know about it. All right, in other elections have consequences stories, as we warned you earlier in the summer, as Republicans and the Trump administration were threatening and then succeeding in clawing back funding of more than $1 billion that had been appropriated to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to help fund NPR and PBS stations around the country. Well, Americans, as we had warned, would be endangered by those cuts, particularly in rural areas, which rely on NPR and PBS stations for emergency warnings, local emergency warnings, on hundreds of small local stations around the country, which rely most heavily on that federal funding that has now been cut. We have, of course, been reporting for years on the dangers faced in small towns, rural regions, from the corporate takeover of our public airwaves by major broadcast conglomerates who automate the programming of these small local stations or run them out of a corporate headquarters hundreds or thousands of miles away. Because when bad things happen in the middle of the night in small towns, local radio is often the only place that residents can get information on those local dangers. But with corporations, based down in Texas, for example, buying up many of those small local radio stations all over the country over the past decade or three, the only folks in many cases that are left are these non-commercial public community radio stations that, were still found in many areas. And those stations are now being threatened as well by the Trump GOP gutting all of the funding to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting that then went to National Public Radio and public broadcast system TV stations. And sure enough, as warned, the dangers we warned about are now coming into play. As E&E News' Greenwire reported late last week, public radio and television stations are now scrambling to keep their disaster warning systems alive after Congress passed the massive rescission bill last month that clawed back $1.1 billion in funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This was a consequence that many, including even some congressional Republicans, had warned about during the weeks leading up to that vote on the measure, even though nearly all of those Republicans, I should note, ended up voting for it anyway, while zero Democrats did so. Stations now are scrambling to keep disaster warning systems functional right now. This along the Atlantic coast, station managers are seeing cuts take effect in the heart of hurricane season. Yes, even as a monster Hurricane Erin is breezing off the right up the Atlantic seaboard, and with storm warnings now in effect for some areas of, for example, in North Carolina that are affected by this. More on that storm in our Green News report shortly. But it's not just the threat of major hurricanes, notes E&E, across the northern plains. Station managers warn that rural areas could be left without weather alerts during winter storms. And PBS outlets in northern California towns that can push alerts during an earthquake in seconds are now facing a complete shutdown. Without stations in cities like Eureka and Redding, which have lost over 40% of their operating budget, quote, those areas would basically go dark, said PBS Southern California President Andrew Russell. Stations in Oklahoma are unable to replace aging transmitters that provide warnings for emergencies like tornadoes and train derailments, said Gretchen Gordon, general manager of KUAC in Alaska, quote, our community is going to hurt. We're not going to be the same, and it won't be for lack of trying, but it's just that we just can't anymore. Meanwhile, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the nonprofit that distributed federal funds to public media, that long brought you Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers and Reading Rainbow and Clifford the Big Red Dog and much, much more, including disaster warnings in local areas facing imminent emergencies. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting recently announced that it will now be shutting down operations entirely by January of 2026. So yes, elections have consequences, just as policies have consequences. And Americans are already starting to feel some of those consequences, even with major disasters looming off their coast. In a monster-sized hurricane intensified by climate change, which is also being made worse by this administration, as we discuss in our latest Green News Report.
From a meteorological standpoint, it's mesmerizing, it's beautiful, it is a pageant of meteorological mayhem.
Hurricane Erin already setting records with its meteorological mayhem. Climate change drove record levels of global humidity in 2024. Plus, UN talks to curb plastic pollution collapsed, with oil-producing nations...
Hi, USA!
...refusing to limit plastic production.
All of that mayhem, meteorological, and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Texas Democrats fled the state partly to deny the legislature the necessary quorum before voting and mostly to get out of Texas during the summer because it is hotter than the devil's taint. Now, this move.
It is. Working blue. This is your Green News Report. Okay, I know, Desi, you have been talking about Hurricane Erin for quite a few days when it was way out of reach and nobody was sure what to make of it. Well, things have taken a turn for the dramatic with this storm.
Yes, they have. Powerful Hurricane Erin is the first hurricane of the 2025 season, and it is a record breaker. Fueled by near-record warm ocean waters, Erin rapidly intensified explosively from a Category 1 to a Category 5 in less than 15 hours, setting a new record for the fastest intensifying Atlantic hurricane to occur before September 1st.
Now, rapid intensification is like 35-mile-an-hour increase in 24 hours. This was triple that.
Yes. Now, Erin is not expected to landfall in the U.S., but will produce extreme rainfall, dangerous surf, and rip currents along East Coast beaches, particularly for North Carolina.
The good news, it's stirring up the water, which helps to cool it down since it's been kind of record hot.
In Pakistan, devastating flash floods have killed at least 340 people in the mountainous northwestern region after seasonal monsoon rains turned into cloudbursts, triggering devastating flash floods that washed away entire villages. Across Scandinavia, July's deadly heat wave was supercharged by man-made global warming. That's according to an analysis by the international team of scientists at World Weather Attribution. Norway, Finland, and Sweden saw a prolonged historic heat wave that included a record run of 22 days above 86 degrees Fahrenheit and hot overnights. The Guardian reports that the persistent heat exacerbated wildfires, killed reindeer, and supercharged toxic algae blooms in seas and lakes.
Wait, killed reindeer?
Yes.
There goes Christmas.
Man-made climate change drove record levels of humidity around the world in 2024, one of the lesser-known risks to public health. That's according to the American Meteorological Society's new State of the Climate report. Last year set new records for levels of water vapor in the atmosphere and for the number of humid days, with the planet seeing 35 more days of high humid heat than the average since 1990. And 10 more humid days than the previous record set in 2023.
You know, the Trump administration says none of this is happening.
Well, 2024 was the hottest year ever recorded globally, and the researchers warn the increase in hot, humid conditions is a rising danger to public health, no matter what the Trump administration says. A different new analysis this week finds that man-made climate change is intensifying humidity this summer and making nighttime temperatures hotter. According to the Washington Post, since the start of June, nearly half of the planet has experienced record or near-record hot overnight temperatures, including the U.S., Europe, and Asia. In the U.S., during July, 18 states set new records for humidity levels. Overnight heat elevates the risk of health hazards because it prevents the body from cooling down, particularly in areas with little air conditioning. And a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture and humidity. Finally, in Geneva, Switzerland, negotiators working on a landmark treaty to address the global crisis of plastic pollution failed to reach an agreement with no clear path forward. Plastics are made from petroleum products, and oil and gas-producing nations, including the United States, joined with the plastics industry to oppose any legally binding limits on plastic production. Humanity produces more than 400 million tons of new plastic each year. That's projected to nearly double by 2040. Less than 10% of plastic is recycled. UN Environment Program Director Inger Andersen said that despite the challenges, this process will continue.
People want a deal. Everyone has to understand that this work will not stop because plastic pollution will not stop.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Can't stop, won't stop. Can't stop, won't stop. Can't stop, won't stop. Can't stop.
Desi Doyen, you referenced the oil-producing nations who can't stop, won't stop producing plastic and
right.
have scuttled the summit there.
Yep.
You mentioned the United States.
Yes, because the United States was kind of the ringleader of it, but the other nations were Russia,
uh-huh.
Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, and Iran, and a couple more oil-producing nations. So, yeah, the United States, the Trump administration, that's who they're siding with.
We're in great company, aren't we?
Yep.
Very proud to be an American, because at least I know I'm free. All right. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always appreciated and an honor. If you missed any portion of today's show, want to give it another listen or share it with someone you know, love, or hate, you can do so for free anytime at bradblog.com. There is no paywall at bradblog.com. We have never been supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We are only ever supported by, yes, listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves as long as we can. That's bradblog.com/donate. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Can't stop, won't stop.